Welcome to the Trauma Resonance Resilience Podcast. And I'm your host, Lisa Cherry, and I've got an absolutely fantastic podcast for you today. You're going to just absolutely love it. I know you are. First of all, let me just tell you, I'm going to introduce a couple of people today that I know you're going to love and that are going to, I'm going to talk to you about how we actually got here, because I think the little story that brought us here is absolutely lovely. So first up, let me just introduce the two people that are going to be on the podcast today. First of all, we have someone who is a youth worker and a musician from Brixton called Jamar. And we have an author, a youth worker, an education consultant based in London, who's been working in and around youth services, secondary schools and criminal justice system for over a decade. He focuses his work on preventing social exclusion and violence among young people who face systemic disadvantage. He's the author of an amazing book, which is another thing that brought me to invite Kieran and Jamar onto the podcast. And the rest will be revealed. So hello.
I mean, hi. Good afternoon.
Hello. It's great to be here. Thank you for having us.
It's so good. Do you know what, Jamar? I'm going to start with you because you brought us here. So I'm going to tell you what I think happened, and then you can tell me if you think that happened too, right? So what happened was, I was speaking at a conference, a music conference, which is a little bit outside my comfort zone for a multitude of reasons, not least is that I don't play an instrument. But I was talking about trauma and healing and recovery and music as a vehicle for that. And you sat through the whole thing, just kind of just like so excitedly nodding. And then lunchtime came and you just like picked me up off the floor and gave me this massive hug. And someone said to me, God, you must have not like seen each other for ages. And I was like, I've never met him before. It was so fantastic. And then by the end of the day, you said to me, there is this book. You've got to read this book. I'm in this book and you've got to read it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go and read that book. So Jamar, is that how you remember what happened that day?
Kind of. Similar. So we were both at the music conference. Funnily enough, I was actually presenting at the music conference as well. And then lunchtime came and I guess I was just taken like by your presentation, and I said to myself, yeah, Lisa, yeah, I've got to chat to her. Yeah, I've got to speak to her before I leave today. Do you get it? We ended up talking about different aspects of systems around young people. And then I mentioned the book that I co-wrote with Kieran. And then, yeah, we're here now, isn't it?
Be careful what you wish for, Jamar. That's the thing. Be careful what you wish for. So you are one of life's natural kind of connectors and you're a real people person and you're so warm. That's what I really felt about you when I met you. And those are gifts. Those are real gifts that will create such change. So I'm so excited to have you here today. And of course, the book, Cut Short, is written by our other guest, Kieran. Hello, Kieran.
Hello. That's a really nice story to introduce this, because I don't think I knew that. I knew the headline, but I didn't know the story. So yeah, great. So glad to be here.
It's really good to have you here. And I know that the paperback of this book, and I'm going to tell everybody they absolutely have to read it. I read a lot. Okay, I'm always reading books. And I read extensively. And your book, I think, is profound. It's full of wisdom. I love that it focuses and centers on youth work. And I love how you are really invited into humility on so many occasions. Mm. I really, really enjoyed that reflection. Mm. And I wonder, listen, you know, when I'm thinking about that, I'm wondering what's coming up for you when I'm expressing that that's one of the things that I really picked up.
Yeah, I think it's really, I mean, thank you firstly for reading it and for your compliments, but I think you saying that being invited into humility is an interesting choice of words that I haven't heard, but seems to be resonating with people, that sentiment and that honesty that I try to write with in the book and I try to move with in life. I'm really glad that was picked up by people like yourself. So yeah, it feels really good that paid dividends, I guess, writing it like that. I really wanted the book to be an opportunity to like show my growth as well as loads of other things. And you only grow by, you know, trying things and making mistakes and learning from them and listening to people. And I wanted to, you know, there's lots of aims with the book, which I guess we'll get into. And there's various things that happen and it's a story and Jamal's voicing is amazing or whatever. But I guess, yeah, as a youth worker, as a sort of person navigating through this work in general, I'm glad that my humility and the way I like have developed that over the years in different ways has shone through in the book. So yeah, thank you for saying that.
Jamal, when you were, because you're obviously quite a bit older now, because this is going back really at a very specific kind of political time, really focused around that kind of 2015, 2017, that period of time with a lot of political change, a different way of understanding the world that became incredibly polarized. And the depths of the ideology of austerity really gripping young people. And this book is about how that really gripped your community that you were living in. And I wondered how that felt for you to now have a kind of written record of that, because that's a real treat, isn't it? To have that kind of written record of a period of life that was incredibly challenging.
I guess for me, it's like, so, okay. So just to take it back a little bit, like when Kieran first mentioned the idea of the book to me, it was a thing where it's like me as a young person that's got like, so it's like Kieran at the time was like one of the only like older mentor figures that I genuinely put a lot of trust in like that. So it's like, because obviously growing up in an environment I come from, it's like you're used to having like someone just kind of dip in and dip out whenever kind of thing. And Kieran was like one of the only like consistent adults around me like that. And it was a thing where it's like I had put a lot of trust into him. So it's like whenever he said, well, let's do something or let's try something new, I'd naturally be down to try it. So it's like when he mentioned the book to me, because me and him had already written like one or two articles, it was just like another day in the office and all right, cool, let's do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes, yeah, come, let's do it, whatever. And I didn't really see like the full potential of it. Like I said, to me it was just like a kind of another day in the office, do you know what I mean? Just like, I guess now that I'm older and I can actually take the space away from it to kind of reflect on it, it's like, oh wow, like I didn't really realize how deep it actually is and how big of a deal it actually was. Do you know what I mean? I guess that's like a recent realization. Now that I've actually taken the time to be able to like actually reflect on the process of it, especially with everything else that had gone on around me at the time as well. So yeah.
Is that something that you felt, Kieran, or did you understand the magnitude of what you were doing?
No. As in, you know, I am 10 years older than Jamar, and I'm the writer here, or you know, the person that went into this process, not initially planning to write a book at all, but I became a journalist and then was writing little bits and bobs, and then started the process of planning the book. And so I had a set of expectations that are kind of, I guess, base level when you're, if anyone writing a book. But no, you know, I every single day, I can say this with, I'm sure, I think it's the same for Jamar. Every single day, there's some sort of new thing that happens that I couldn't predict that I'd be getting these random messages from teachers and invitations to podcasts like this, and opportunities to sign people's books because they've read it and they've come up to me and they want me to, and you know, just little things like that where you're actually connecting with real people who know what they're doing, or like feel like that they've gained something from the book. That experience is very, very special. And when you're busy writing the book, that's not necessarily the first thing you're thinking about. You're thinking about trying to make the book good, as well as manage my mental health, manage young people that I'm working with, like Jamar. Like, there was lots going on throughout the writing of this book, and then the pandemic hit. So there's a true bliss that I'm experiencing now, especially with a bit of distance from the hardback last year. Now I'm a bit less anxious about fearing about reviews, and you know, I've got enough positive feedback to know what I've done is good. And so now I can just really enjoy these conversations, and it's amazing. And I never could have anticipated how special it now feels, which is great. And how much can be achieved off the back of writing this. I had aims and expectations, but they're being reinvented every day, because there's just so much interesting stuff that's coming from it.
When you mentioned mental health, you know, I can really feel that. I can really feel that.
Yeah.
Being someone who's written a lot myself, and on lived experience, some of it living experience, which was yours, was, you know, you were writing about living experience, which is quite a different space actually from just writing about lived experiences. This was like in real time.
Correct.
So so I'm really curious about how you did manage, you know, was writing about it in real time something that supported your mental health? And I guess this is for both of you, really. Did for you, Jamar, know that that was going on, support you emotionally and mentally? Or did you have to do other things? And the same question to you, Kieran, really.
I mean, Kieran, you're one, isn't it?
Yeah, I can go. So I started writing a diary when I was 19, in my first degree at Bristol University. And I actually ended up retaking my year because I suffered from depression. And as a way of trying to cope with that, I wrote my diary, and I became addicted to writing this diary as like a way of just healing from. And it wouldn't be profound, but it would be like just something that I stuck to every day that allowed me a bit of an outlet to put my feelings down and move on from them and figure them out on the page. And that practice has never stopped, you know. So the book is the grandest version of that diary. It's like a way of coping with what's going on. And I suppose what is then added to that in when you start adding like my style of journalism or writing over the last 5 years is that I have tried to introduce that practice to Jamar and Dimitri, and you know, they're part of this writing process, and therefore Jamar has an opportunity to tell his story and heal from stuff that he's been through as well. So I've tried to turn that writing practice into like a collaborative youth work practice, basically. So yeah, it definitely helped. Without it, I'd be weaker. I would be that it just it, the same reality wouldn't have been borne out. But that isn't to say that writing the book was easy, because it was really difficult, and not being able to switch off, you know, doing my job in the day and then doing lots of voluntary work including mentoring Jamal. And then, you know, writing a book of 110,000 words sort of over a pandemic when I'm trying to pay my rent and I'm trying to, you know, there's lots of things going on. So it wasn't easy. So it also introduced new mental health challenges that I had to get through. And so it was a bit of a give and take, but overall something that I'm extremely proud of and glad that I've done, because it means that I've grown a lot and produced something special. So yeah, it's good to pick up, good that you picked up on that. Important.
Yeah. Cheers, Kieran. What about you, Jamal?
I feel like because I was much younger when we were actually in the process of writing the book, yeah, I feel like in a way it did help me reflect on, so me as an artist, it's like naturally I write a lot because obviously the nature of my music is like very reflective and it's like very reflective. Do you get what I mean? So it's like similar to Kieran, it's like I was doing a lot of writing that was kind of just helping me like purge things. And it's like me actually being in the process of writing a book, I didn't actually realize until recently that it was actually another way of me purging a lot of things that was going on anyway. Do you know what I mean? And I didn't actually realize it because it's like I'm just there and all I know is like, yeah, man's writing this book with Kieran. Do you get it? But I didn't actually see it like, oh yeah, I'm actually reflecting on a lot of different things and like actually letting a lot of stuff out. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I'd say that's what it really was, to be honest.
Mm. That's really good reflections. And it's really good for people to understand that when people gift themselves in that way, you are, you know, there's a kind of cost implication, you know, to the self. And not that that is everyone's responsibility, but actually that I always think that that's how any reading of somebody's story should be held. It's such a gift to have that. And there were several stories told through the book. And just to kind of bring into the conversation, really, I think one of the things that you were really trying to do was make sense of the intersection between being a Black young man, and you explained in your book why that was your focus, in the ideology of austerity, in the particular political climate, against a language that was quite violent. And I think you do explore that in the book around this idea of a particular focus on knife crime and how all of that mixes up, intermingles and becomes something violent towards those young people. And I think you do that really well. Do you want to kind of talk a little bit, Kieran, about doing that and about saying what needed to be said but that wasn't being said actually, and what that must have felt like to be writing about it but actually trying to be heard in real time as well? There's a real juxtaposition there.
I can certainly, there's a lot going on in your question, but I guess I can just answer, you know, intuitively, which is that I like I said just now, to some extent, this book was a collaboration between myself, Jamar, Dimitri, the character of Carl, the character of Tony, who are both based on real people. And those are the four main people, but actually then you've got a community of like 30 to 50 people who are interviewed in the book, who contribute their own perspectives. And then you probably got a community of, I don't know, 100 to 200 people at a guess who played a role in all of our lives throughout the course of the book's creation. And that might just be being at the end of a phone, needing to have a chat about something. It might be making introductions, you know, offering a safe space or a cup of tea when like just when certain conversations need to be had, people that are willing to challenge me as well about my perspectives and what I might think or what I'm going to write, what I'm going to include, what I'm going to exclude. The point I'm making is that I only found it possible to create something that could speak so critically about society while living in it, because I feel like I was collaborating with all these different people. And that goes back to maybe what I think at the roots of all of this in my work is that like relationship building. Like, I feel like that's what I'm good at. I can write, but I feel like actually lots of people can write. It's having something interesting and worthwhile to say when you write. And I feel like that comes from developing all the relationships that I've built over the years and having people like Jamar who, put their trust in me and were generous with their time and generous with their faith in what the project was. Like, I really think that I just want to always stress that it's a collaboration, and that's the only way it's possible to write something of this nature. It wasn't just me sat there ringing people up and then writing it all out. It was like, I actually said this I had a chat yesterday about the book with someone, and I said, for every hour that I spent writing, there was like 100 hours of probably of like being with people and chatting to people and, you know.
You don't know me. We've not met before, but I hope we do get to know each other a bit. To me, there is only collaboration. There are only relationships and there's only interconnectedness. Mm. And so that, I think maybe that's one of the things that felt so comfortable about reading the book, because it is that moi that Dan Siegel calls moi, you know, that pulls us. It's not the I within that. And that really comes across. And, you know, for me as a reader and a writer and everything that I do, that's just so important.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, let's talk about Tony for a minute. Did you know Tony, Jamar? I didn't pick up your relationship with Tony. I picked up a lot of Kieran's relationship with Tony.
It's funny, isn't it? It's almost like me and Kieran have done like a weird like play switch in the last couple of years, because now I work very closely with Tony.
Ah.
And Carl. And Dimitri. So yeah, it's like
an amazing, but I don't think it's going to see the light of day publicly in terms of storytelling for years, but there's amazing stuff happening now in terms of the collaborations between the characters. Basically, it's amazing to see. For me, it's the best thing, actually.
So basically Jacob Sawyer, which is in the book, I actually work there now with Tony, and I'm actually part of a leadership team that runs and operates from that actual youth center, and we're doing all sorts of stuff in and around the local area, not really to lower knife crime but more prevent knife crime at the moment. So that includes like events for the young people, different apprenticeship opportunities, different like open days, different workshop series with different types of, like with different people in different industries, just to kind of like grab hold of all of the guys that slip through the net, and kind of just keep them hopeful, and kind of show them that they do have the ability to do whatever it is they want to do.
Is Tony as grounded and as I kind of really had a bit of a crush on Tony, like in the book, because honestly I don't tell him, right? So I think what it was he was so grounded. He was so community focused. He was so dedicated. He didn't take any of Kieran's nonsense, which I kind of really appreciated you sharing that kind of that real beautiful mentoring relationship that you had with him, which is safe and trustworthy, but has a line. And if you cross the line, he was able to push back on that. And it was, I thought that that in itself was just such a beautiful kind of relationship and approach to understanding the power of mentoring and the power of being that person. Is he as lovely as that? Do you think he'd let me?
He is that guy. I'm telling you, he is that guy. Like, he's genuinely that guy. He's not having it. Did you get it? Like, very community driven. He's not having it at all. Did you get it? Like, anything that doesn't make sense, he's going to be like, yo, listen, that don't make no sense. And if you don't make that make sense, it's not coming around here. Did you get it? Like, and he's always willing to drop gems on you, innit? Like, he might just drop something on you. You're just thinking to yourself, like, raw, like, I wasn't thinking about it like that. Do you get what I mean? So, yeah.
Every community should have a Tony, right?
100%. 100%. 100%.
Definitely. And I would also add, though, that every community should have a Tony, and then also provide an infrastructure that allows Tony to do proper work.
Absolutely.
Because that's a limitation I try and show in the book a bit.
You do. You do, because you show what happens when that's there, when you have that infrastructure, and then the demise of that building, of not being used or being shipped out privately.
Absolutely. Yeah. But also, when other things around it, you know, if that becomes the only space that the most likely young people in the area who are to fall victims to violence can go, then his role suddenly takes on this unrealistic. No one human can protect that number of people, you know. So my point is that all the compliments that Jamal's just given and you've given, I would stand by them and add to them. But also, there are real, like, unless proper investments made and systemic change to, like, how we understand social problems in communities, unless that takes place, then we're going to lose that wisdom. So I suppose it's like, I want to, whenever I'm celebrating the role that he played, it's also like really trying to focus also on the need to enable more of that, because I fear that that's one of the massive zoomed out losses that's going to take place out of austerity, is that there's a whole generation of these community elders who can't do it anymore, and they didn't have the chance to pass on their knowledge because they were firefighting.
And I think that, you know, the last 12 years have decimated youth services. I think that was the other thing that I just loved about the book, really, was bringing youth work back into the centre of creating change, because youth work has just so many centres and facilities were just closed, and you're writing right in that period and you're demonstrating the impact of that.
Can I say something?
Please.
So you see, okay, so right now I'm in a position where I'd say I'm pretty privileged to be in the position I'm in right now in terms of the different pieces of work that I'm actually doing. So like, for example, I get to do work in and around the community with people like from the council. The day that I met you, I actually left the conference to actually go to Wales to work with horses, to do a peaceful leadership training. And it's like, I've also got the chance to actually work with police in terms of like community facilitating and training. And when you talk about the demise of youth services, I tend to see it, like, I tend to think to myself, okay, all these youth services have been pushed out the way, and people of the likes, like paramedics and the police officers, are left to kind of pick up the pieces with the rest of the communities. And like me being someone that's got the chance to be a mentor and be mentored, it's like, I feel like youth work itself has so much value to it that is unexplainable if you don't actually come from those kind of environments. Like, because I say this to people all the time, it's if youth workers had more funding and more investment put into them, the numbers on, and this is just like, we're talking about the reported numbers, because a lot of the stuff that happens isn't actually reported anyway. The numbers that are actually reported would be much, 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 much lower because of the fact that youth workers in general play such a massive role in a lot of these young people's lives. It's crazy. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, if even like, if I say to myself, like a lot, like if emergency services, governing bodies and youth workers could come together, the problem that we have now, the issues that we have now, a lot of them wouldn't be as prominent as they actually are because of the fact that a lot of the kids do put a lot of trust in their youth workers. Do you get what I mean? And I feel like on the flip side of it, a lot of young people feel like they kind of can't trust the youth workers sometimes because of the fact that, because of obviously other stuff around it, like the politics around it, it's very inconsistent nowadays. Do you know what I mean? And it just, and I feel like the book emphasizes how important youth work actually is and how much of a foundation it builds for a lot of the young people that do go through a lot of challenging situations. Do you get what I mean? Because like, if you look at what some of the kids are going through now, it's wild. Like, it's crazy. Like, you've got kids feeling like they have to leave their houses with swords as long as them. Like, what? Do you know what I mean? And I feel like where I was lucky was the fact that obviously I had someone like Kieran, do you get it? So I had that role model that wasn't my parents. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, only God knows what would have happened if Kieran was not around, innit? Like, my life story might have been completely different. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, me acknowledging that actually makes me work even harder in terms of what I do now with youth work, in terms of when I go into schools, when I have conversations with young people in my area, because it's like I've actually been able to be like a living testimony of what happens when your youth worker is allowed to be consistent. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
I love that, because you're talking about a cycle. You're talking about you want to be the adult that you had because you know what that did for you.
100%.
Yeah, and that is part of a network. And I guess it's the demise of that network and that breaking down of that network that's so harmful. And just moving us on slightly, because I'm with you, Jamal, about the youth service. I'm absolutely with you about youth work. In the book, there's also, you really chart as well. You do something else, Kieran, which is pretty clever. You chart the creation of the VRU in London, and you provide a record of that, and which I think is noteworthy. I'm interested, though, I do lots of stuff for VRUs all around the country, and I'm interested in, I always think it's like the service that slipped through the political net. You know, like there's so many different ways of being involved with VRUs all around the country, and the work is phenomenal, but it's so misaligned to the ideology of austerity. I don't quite understand how it kind of came about, because if there's a way of working in that way, then why were we not always working in that way since, you know, why did we need to go through austerity? Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like there's an ideology about the VRU that aligns with supporting public services that make a difference for communities.
Yeah, I agree. It is a contradiction. I mean, I think that there was a sort of perfect storm of different people calling for it, and the government being their hand being forced, actually. But also because, you know, it's not just the government, you know, Sadiq Khan will take credit and there's a confluence of different actors involved that would have created the VRU. I'm a bit speechless because I was about to talk about the VRU and then you just talked about it, so it was a bit crazy, but I guess that's how it's meant to be. So the reason I was going to mention it is because, you know, we've just talked about the decimation of youth services and the impact that can have, and actually made specific reference to Jamar's community. But Jamar is specifically the consortium, the cohort of different organizations that are working in theory in collaboration with the same funding pot and the same set of sort of aims, and that type of local multi-agency approach. He's literally receiving money to do that work, as are other people that are doing similar work, young people and youth workers in that area, precisely because the VRU exists. So what's really nice is, from the book's perspective, is that it's the ongoing real life story is that the VRU was created, and then the main characters in it are in their own way contributing to the sustenance of its work on the ground. Mm-hmm. I still think it's still grossly misunderfunded though. I mean, sorry, underfunded though, is it? Like, my understanding is that in terms of actual government investment, it has very little, relative to how much, you know, other areas of public spending, is still like relatively little. Is that, that's my understanding.
I wouldn't be able to comment on that. I haven't looked at what the 2010 public spending was. I imagine it's far less. I have no doubt in my mind that it's far less.
I've got some statistics at the end of the book, which I'm trying to recall from memory, but in terms, like, this was up until 2 years ago, so it might have changed by now. But I know that the amount of like millions given to each VRU when I wrote the book was certainly, like, if you actually break it down, it's relatively little. And I'm sure that it's grown over time, and I'm sure that it will grow over time. But yeah, I agree with you that the inception of that as like a model, but it does kind of sit against austerity, but I also think it's a nice, neat headline, isn't it? So whichever government person signed it off was probably, I'm just a bit cynical about this government.
No way, Kieran, that didn't come across at all in your book.
Well, exactly. So I just think it's PR for them. They don't care. Like,
yeah, you know what it is? I would say, because you know what it is? I'm just gonna say as it is, isn't it? Whoever don't like it, don't like it, innit? It's a thing where me personally, me actually growing up in these actual environments and seeing what it's actually like in terms of the youth services, etc. It's like, I feel like it's got to a stage where right now there's two elements to it. There's obviously the element of PR, but I feel like there's also an element of the fact that a lot of the people that are involved in politics, their kids' cousins or whatever, are now being affected by the issue as well. Did you get it? So in a selfish way, a lot of people that might be higher up that can actually put money in, that have the access to the money, they'll put it in to make it look as if, like, yeah, cool, I care, innit? This is something I'm trying to stop. But at the same time, it's like, in the back of their head, it's like, no, actually, a lot of my people are starting to be affected by this now, innit? How can I kind of change the way it's looking? Do you know what I mean? And that's just the way I see it personally, from what I've actually seen growing up through these youth services. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, it's almost like the same ideology of, if you're not connected to it, you're not really bothered about it. Do you get what I mean? Like you might hear something happen, you're not really that connected to it, so you don't really invest time or energy into it as such. Do you get what I mean? And that's just the way I feel about it personally. Do you understand? From what I've actually seen. Do you get me? So,
well, what really came across in the book was the kind of real sense of abandonment, actually. Mm. Just like, I understand why you would think that. And it's, you know, it's not a million miles away either of you what you've said from my view. You know, that's what you're doing here. Because if you don't want to know about this stuff, you're not going to talk about it, are you? You know, if people don't want to know, they don't want to know. And that really takes me into the final question, really. So how do you feel, think, propose, wonder, ponder about how you do get the book into the hands of people who can learn something that ordinarily they would never, ever get to hear about?
That's an interesting one, you know. I would say obviously it's a joint effort, innit? Because it's like, first of all, you've actually got to open up your mind to the possibility of you actually taking on board this information. First of all, that's the first bit before anything. And it's like, I guess that's one of the main things it comes down to like actually opening your mind up a little bit and separating yourself from the world you might already live in and actually saying to yourself, right, cool, you know what? Let me actually explore this a little bit and see what's actually going on, and let me actually try and get the time to understand it. Because obviously it's like the world I'm living in compared to the world a lot of other people are living in is completely different. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, as in, and this is an example I use all the time. I can walk into my local park and think, whoa, what's going to happen to me today? Whilst someone else that has no clue can walk into the same park and think, oh yeah, I can have a nice little picnic today. Do you know what I mean? And I'm completely fine. Do you get what I mean? So I guess it comes down to like actually accepting there is another side to the coin and actually going out and taking the step to actually go and get the book and actually read it and take a time to understand it. So yeah.
Thanks. What do you think, Kieran? Where are you at with that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm, of course, I agree with everything Jamal says. I suppose maybe it's worth talking about the paperback a bit now, because, so I've got it here. Jamal hasn't actually got a copy yet, but, and part of the rebrand of it and the new subtitle, While We're Failing Our Youth and How to Fix It, the thinking behind that is that it makes it more grabbable for the average person in a bookshop who wants to understand a problem and solve it. I'm proud of the hardback. I love the hardback cover and I love the way, you know, it's branded, but I think it also needs to be accessible to the everyday person who walks into a bookshop or who like sees a headline on the television on the 10 o'clock news in their slippers and thinks, actually, let me order a book that helps me understand this problem. And I think that the new rollout of the paperback, aside from it being cheaper, obviously, is deliberately to make it is to make it more accessible and more attractive to people who want to understand it, rather than, you know, for example, someone who might enjoy creative nonfiction literary work. I appreciate those people because I'm one of them as well, but it's trying to be realistic about like getting it out there and making it really like accessible. And in the hardback, there are now questions at the back that correspond to each of the chapters.
Nice.
That I've written, so that if you're a teacher or a youth worker or a university lecturer or a reading group, you can read different parts of each chapter and then have conversations that I've deemed important for my work. And again, that's to try and embed within the book a reason for practitioners to be promoting it and giving it out and recommending it. It's trying to give it that extra like push. It's not just a story, it's a resource. So I think I'm just telling you this because this is the back end thinking of the new phase in the book's life. I think it's an important one for me. It's really important actually that it is understood as a resource now. So I hope that will create a groundswell of, you know, new life for it and get people talking about it and reading it on a slightly new level, rather than, you know, last year it's been amazing, but it's also accepting that there are limits to a hardback rollout, you know, and a book like this that's quite new in form. So yeah, that's kind of like, I'm looking really positively and hopefully ahead to the next, it comes out in 3 weeks. So that's the next steps for it.
I love that. And I think the subheading is fantastic. I can see people now going off on their holidays, picking up the books, something to read on their flight and all the rest of it. It's got that look about it as well. I think that is smart thinking, where marketing converges with some real life thinking, because at the end of the day, I think this is a book that can really create systemic change. I really do. I really do. Listen, thank you both so much for coming on the podcast. And Jamar, for making this happen, connecting people, that's a skill of yours. So yeah, thanks so much. And I wish you so much luck with the paperback, and let's get everyone reading it.
Thank you for the support.